Hugh Everett's theory was so bold that it set him on a collision course with the most brilliant minds of the physics world. Taken to the extreme, parallel universes would mean that with every event that could happen in more ways than one, universes branch off in different directions. That means that moment to moment, we divide into multiple versions of ourselves.
It's an excerpt from the documentary Parallel Worlds, Parallel Lives. It's the story of Hugh Everett, the troubled genius who, at the age of 24, gave birth to the theory of parallel universes. It's the crazy idea that anything that can happen is happening at the quantum level of reality. It's a radical concept, but one that's become a staple of science fiction and is now accepted by a surprising number of today's physicists. Back in the mid-50s, when Hugh Everett came up with the idea, no one paid much attention. And Everett ended up drifting away from physics and died young. His son, Mark Oliver Everett, never really knew his father, but recently he's made an effort to understand this mysterious figure from his childhood. And I should say that Mark knows next to nothing about physics. He's an indie rock star, better known as E, the lead singer of the band The Eels. He's also written a memoir called Things the Grandchildren Should Know. And he's the on-camera guide for the documentary about his dad. Steve Paulson recently sat down with Mark Everett to talk about his father.
Today, your father is celebrated for his revolutionary theory of parallel universes. Did you have any idea that he was some sort of scientific genius?
Not really when I was growing up. It was something I was very vaguely aware of, but he was a complete mystery in every way. I didn't really understand it until after he died, and the phone started ringing with what I called physics groupies who were calling my mom to grill her for information about my father. And as the years went on and the technology caught up with his theory, they started to take him more and more seriously. And now it's 50 years later, and it checks out really well.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of memories do you have of your father as you were growing up?
Well, he was like a piece of furniture to me, really. I mean, it's odd because, you know, the most common situation is where there's an absent father and, you know, they leave the family. In this case, he was always a physical presence until I was 19. He was there every night. But that's what's so odd about it is I just couldn't tell you anything about what he was like. He was just sort of this lump on a chair.
So you never really talked to him?
Very rarely. It was always, you know, considered a real novelty to my sister and I whenever he did really speak much or emote.
And then when you were 19, you discovered his body after he died.
Well, that was a particularly surreal experience for me because I realized, you know, I was on the phone with the 911 operator and she's teaching me how to do CPR and I had to pick his body up off the bed and put it on the floor. And it just was so strange to me that I was touching my father because I couldn't remember us ever actually touching.
Hmm. And your troubles with your family didn't just end with your father. You had one sibling, an older sister, Liz, whom you looked up to a great deal, but she had all kinds of problems, didn't she?
Yeah, and she ended up committing suicide eventually.
And you found her as well, not dead, but you found her once nearly dead after she'd swallowed a whole bottle of pills.
Yeah, the same summer that I found my father, just before that, I had found my sister on the bathroom floor from her first attempt at suicide.
Did you wonder whether you were going to turn out like she did?
Yeah, you know, it's something that still haunts me. You feel at some point when your whole family has died, you start to wonder if there's some sort of curse or something. But I was really lucky in that I got music and it literally saved my life. And I think both of us, my sister and I, were just two sides of the same coin. And I just got lucky that I got obsessed with music and put all my energy into that, and it gave me a purpose in my life. And she didn't have anything like that.
Life is good, and I feel great. 'Cause mother says I was a great mistake. Love came for the soul. Better give me something to fill the hole before I sputter out.
you obviously had a rough childhood in all kinds of ways. We could also add that you talk about how miserable you were at school during most of those years. But then you say that some of the most horrible moments of your life have led to some of the best.
Well, that's the kind of thing that keeps me an optimist. You go through these terrible situations and then good things can, you know, rise up from the ashes. In my mind, when I really became like a real artist was after the first album I made with the Eels was very popular, I started to get disgusted with what the music world was all about. And I decided that I was going to make an album about the tragedies in my family. And everybody around me was against the idea and said, nobody's going to want to hear an album about all this death and despair. But I knew that I could do it and actually put a positive spin on it. And not only did I feel like an artist for the first time, but I felt like a man, you know? I felt like that's when I grew up, you know?
Mama gripped onto the milkman's hand, and then she finally gave birth. Years go by, still I don't know who shall inherit this earth.
Recently, you worked with a BBC crew to do a documentary about your father, Hugh Everett, this pioneer of the many worlds theory of quantum physics, a man you hardly knew. Did you come to appreciate him all these years after he died?
Yeah, it was just the best experience for me. I really went into it with trepidation. I didn't have any idea what to expect. And I learned so much about my father to have the opportunity to get to go back to Princeton where he wrote his theory and walk around the campus with his three roommates who are all still alive that were with him when he was writing it. Everybody should be so lucky to get to make a documentary about their father. It was an absolutely healing process for me. It led to me being able to forgive him for his shortcomings as a father because I started to understand why he was the way he was.
Why was he the way he was?
Well, I think his life ultimately was quite tragic because he wasn't taken seriously. He was a 24-year-old kid who came up with this theory that was so ahead of its time, and the faces on the Mount Rushmore of physics weren't about to be knocked off by this 24-year-old kid. So they just brushed him under the carpet.
Well, and in fact, this documentary recounts what must have been a remarkable episode when he went off to Copenhagen. I mean, he's still in his 20s. He goes to meet Niels Bohr, the greatest physicist in the world at that time, the reigning champion of quantum physics. And your father presents this theory, which contradicted what Niels Bohr thought. But
right.
That meeting didn't go well, did it?
No. And you could say my father was quite naive in thinking that Bohr was going to accept his theory because that would mean that Bohr's theory was now void, you know, so it was a crazy idea to expect that to happen.
So after all this happened, your father basically dropped out of the academic world.
Yeah, he just gave up. That was it.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
What was it like to meet some of the people who knew your father?
It was great. It was fascinating. And, you know, now I feel like I know what he was like.
What did they say about him?
You know, your typical genius type of personality. You know, the physicists, they're not known for being great family men. Einstein wasn't so great. And we can't really apply normal people rules to these people. Their minds are not. You know, my memory of him was he was always sitting at the dining room table with a yellow legal pad just scribbling endless physics notations all night. That's what he would do. He'd get up and go to the bathroom, and you look at the pad of paper, and it just looked like Chinese, you know. It was the craziest stuff.
Now, you are obviously not a physicist yourself, but have you come to understand his theory of parallel universes?
Well, one thing I didn't inherit whatsoever from my father was the math gene. Somehow that skipped me. And that was another thing that was great about making the documentary. It was they do such a good job of explaining what that means and how it works.
In the winter of 1954, sometime after the Bohr lecture, fortified by some sherry and a chat with Bohr's assistant, Augie Peterson, Hugh came up with the theory of parallel universes. Hugh argued that everything in the universe, big and small, obeys the laws of quantum mechanics. And instead of the observer, Hugh introduced the notion of splitting. Splitting occurs every time a quantum event happens, and this is how parallel universes are created.
Now, another thing that you say is you've come to realize that both you and your father were idea men, that you become obsessed with ideas and pretty much everything that's not becomes a distraction.
Yeah, that's the main way that I identify with my father. I tend to be very isolated in a lot of ways, like he was. And I get it now, you know, that you're just about to crack the code and the kid wants to go play baseball. And, you know, I understand now.
I'm turning out just like my father, though I swore I never would. Now I can say that I have love for him. I never really understood what it must have been like for him, living inside his head. I feel like he's here with me now, even though he's dead.
Mark Oliver Everett is the lead singer of the band The Eels and the author of the memoir Things the Grandchildren Should Know. He can be seen in the documentary Parallel Worlds, Parallel Lives, produced by Nova and WGBH in Boston for PBS and by the BBC in England. Mark Everett spoke with Steve Paulson.